they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole we found.
Welcome to another edition of Down the Rabbit Hole Newscast, where our crew of Monday morning InfoSec quarterbacks discusses the important events affecting enterprise security and provides their unique analysis and perspective. And now, James Jardine, Michael Santarcangelo, and the White Rabbit, Rafael Los.
All right, folks, welcome to another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. It's Raf, and look, I'm back for a newscast. been out a bit, and the crew has been holding the fort down, but I'm back this week, fresh from RSA, and we will definitely talk about that. In the meantime, let's do quick intros. Michael, hello, hello.
Hey, so you said fresh from RSA. Did you do RSA wrong? You're supposed to be wiped out, exhausted, trying to figure out what time zone you're in and what needs to get done this week.
Well, that's true. I spent the weekend digging out my mailbox with an industrial strength backhoe here to kind of find the bottom of it, but I did manage to dig out and took a weekend off, relaxed a little bit, and had some fun with the kids, and I'm kind of back at it. Hey, James.
Hello, Raf.
How are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you. I am. I do have my 26 ounce coffee mug, which if you've watched my Twitter feed, you've seen me post about it. My friends at security send it to me, and it's like 20. It's like either 24 or 26 ounces. I can't tell. I haven't actually gotten the chance to pour that much coffee in it, but it's freaking huge. I'm wired. Let's go. Let's do this.
It's huge.
It's no, don't go there. it's tiny hands huge. Anyway, all right. So, guys, I guess we're gonna talk about RSA then, huh?
I mean, you know, I think it would be interesting, you know, since you're now fresh back from it, you had a little bit of time to spend with the family, kind of to consume what you've, you know, been beat down with for a week. I think it'd be an interesting topic, kind of, you know, find out what you learned out there, what you saw, and, you know, what we can all gather from that.
I can sum it up in a couple of bullet points, and we can actually go one by one and talk through them if we'd like, but the big thing is you know, machine learning and artificial intelligence were the buzzwords, far and away. The show floor's bigger than last year, which was bigger than the year before, If anybody can believe that, it was actually just North and South Hall were insane, and now they're building.
You need a GPS now to get around.
So Howard Street is literally torn up in between the two halls, North and South. So there's only like a tiny bit of connecting underneath the street, and if you want to go up and over, you can't cross the street anymore. There, it's like this tiny little walkway. I mean, there's literally like a 30, 40 foot hole in the ground where the street used to be. But they're actually building a brand new building next to South Hall at Moscone. It's like 7 or 8 stories tall. It's huge. So I can only imagine what's going to be there next year. But anywho, it was an experience. I mean, it was, you know, you guys have been out to RSA. It's literally I got there Sunday night, and my first you know, work thing was 8:30 on Monday, and I think I was done by dinner with my team on Thursday night, and then took the flight home on Friday. Kind of quiet.
Well, so let's go back to a couple of the pieces of it, because what I've started to notice is that there's three basic ways that you attend RSA. You don't, and there's a number of reasons why. It's expensive, you're not sure of the value of it, or whatever else. You do attend, but you attend because you're a vendor and it's work. You've got to be there. It's a chance to go meet people. And I think the hallway track and the parties and gatherings at night are almost as exciting for most people as anything they can do during the day. And then the third option is, I've actually talked to some folks in the enterprise that they go, and they go with a plan. They've walked in. They know the talks that they want to go to. They know the vendors that they want to meet. They know the things that they want to sit down and assess. And for them, it's a cost-efficient way to assess a lot of stuff happening in their environment at once. Now, you go probably more on the vendor side, but also because we do the podcast, you talk with a lot of people around a lot of different things. To the people who haven't gone, how would you help them understand the scale of it and the size of it and just some of the pace of what goes on at an RSA conference?
So imagine the first time as a young child, your parents told you you're going to Disney World. You expect, you expect some fun, right? But it's one of those things where you get there and your brain explodes and your eyes get wide and you realize that even if you were there for 3 weeks, you'd never get to do all of it. This is kind of the adult version of that. And you're right. There are some people just attend from, watching social media and choose not to go, or can't go or whatever. I've started going as an attendee. Now I go as a vendor. And it's interesting. There's those three modes are very valid. For me, like I said, for a lot of our vendors, it's nonstop. And you can get lost in the incredible, some of them are still fairly elaborate, although this year was a little bit toned down. Parties, the dinners, the events. I've got one colleague I meet with every year is an enterprise friend of mine. He's a CISO, and he basically, says the same thing every year. My calendar starts in about November, December. It gets bombarded by every vendor who wants to spend time with him, buy him lunch, buy him dinner, buy him, take him out to drinks and breakfast and all this stuff, right? And it's tough for him to do anything but, whittle down his calendar to go talk to vendors. But he does go for some of the insightful stuff that's said. And the unfortunate part, guys, is aside from – we can unpack this in a second here. But there's even if you're going as a customer, right, as a buyer or a learner, we'll say, there's this challenge of actually getting to the tracks because – between hallway con all the vendor events and the show floor, there's actually a conference with speakers that's happening too.
Right.
It's just insane.
Given that you had a crazy, did you take in any talks this year? Did you give any talks this year?
I none of mine got accepted, and I attended exactly zero. If you don't count, I did go to the. To the DevOps Summit and made a brief appearance at the Cloud Security as a flyby. But the DevOps Summit was Dev Security Ops Summit was actually kind of cool. But that is a topic that you can get great, very intelligent speakers, very smart people that can't give a presentation. And on the other side of that is very entertaining people that have little actual content. And somewhere in between, there's the rest. But that was kind of fun. I stayed for most of that. It's about the thing I paid attention to most on Monday. And then, of course, as soon as that was over, it was just go, 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 go. Meeting, 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 meeting. That part of it, I mean, it's fun meeting people like that, but that rapid fire pace of meetings is insane. I wonder how many of my fellow vendors out there, get through that and need like a week off their feet because between Moscone Center and all the meeting space there, you've got the Marriott Marquis. You've got the Four Seasons. You've got there's a couple other hotels nearby and other meeting spaces nearby, and people schedule things back to back. So when I'm going from the show floor in Moscone to like our meeting space we had at the Four Seasons in one of the boardrooms, literally it's like a 10-minute walk if you really hike it. 15 if you are stuck in a crowd. People expect you to be there a minute after your other meeting ends. And I think for a vendor, that's the hardest part of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned DevOps. I'm assuming that was a fairly large buzzword going around RSA this year as well, right?
It was. And I saw this interesting tweet, I think it was yesterday, about, and I even retweeted it and added my own color to it. But somebody said something to the effect of, "Well, we've DevOps, and is it DevOps or SecOps or DevSecOps or SecDevOps or DevOpsSec?" And the idea is, can we just call it DevOps and add security like we always have been trying? But yeah, that was a big one. It was a big one, but it by no means was it the scale of artificial intelligence and machine learning. It literally, like, every year, marketing departments get a new buzzword to go put on their booths, and I know this is kind of the negative side of it, but we try to figure out how many words we can squeeze in from the buzzword bingo board.
Yeah, isn't that always the case? Now, I feel like last year when you got back, you talked about it. Isn't there like a section where there's new kind of vendor space, you know, where people coming to the game and you like to walk through there, kind of see the new stuff coming out? Now, I mean, was that all machine learning? Is there new vendors coming out that are doing some neat stuff?
There's some. I mean, there's a ton of cool stuff. I mean, those are usually the booths at the edges because, you know, the big guys are in the middle. There's booths, of course, at the edges, and that's where all the small ones are. And there was even like a new section up, like in between. I think it was in a North Hall that was, you know, freshly opened this year with more vendors. I look at the board. There's a board. A little embarrassing. There's a board. I was looking for our booth. I had no idea where I was supposed to go. I was a little morning tired. I was going to go visit, make sure everything was set up properly, and don't laugh. I'm looking at this board. I'm going, I know we're in South Hall, but I don't see our booth. And I just realized, because I'm scrolling up and down this giant, like, it's like a stand-up poster, right? It's probably like 3 feet tall, tiny little 12-point font. But as I'm looking at it, I'm going, holy crap, I can't find us on this. And then I realized that's not all the vendors on this side of the floor. That's just the ones that are first-time debuting at RSA. And there was literally over 100 companies in that. So there was a ton of cool Yes, there was a ton of cool stuff on the edges. There was a ton of cool stuff. The thing is, there's always some new niche way to solve a problem. But as I think, as I may have pointed out last year, a lot of the stuff out there is features waiting for a big vendor to find them and incorporate them. And there's a bigger message here, but. Because, you know, a lot of this stuff is like, hey, there's literally one use case for this one product I saw. It was email related. And I could probably name 10 companies that might be interested. And I can name one email security vendor that would buy them up and use it as a product.
What? You know, that's an interesting point. So, because what I wanted to make sure we did here was we focus on some of the upside to it. So you know, first of all, hashtag DTSR. If you went, let us know what your approach to it was, because, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot on this program and that we look at in our industry is if you're just kind of showing up and running through things, I don't think you get the most from it. Raf and I did a podcast from HTCIA. That's almost 2 years ago now. But we talked about, like, how do you get involved? How do you benefit? Now, RSA is its own beast. It's a special sort of a busy and crazy. But, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, that some of the vendors are there actually not to sell to you, but to sell to other vendors. They're trying to get that traction or get that adoption or show that they've got something. And if you think about that, I didn't look at what the booth prices were this year, but it is not a trivial cost. It is something that you're spending money on. So let's flip it for a second to value. Now, you didn't reach in your own pocket to go, but you have to, at some level, as a leader in your organization, talk about the value. Was it valuable for you to be there, Raf?
Well, as a vendor, yes. I mean, absolutely. Even as an attendee, I think it's valuable. The trick is avoiding the $700 a night hotel charges from, you know, clearly we'll call it. I don't want to call them out on it, but there's some of the hotels in the area. You know, if you don't book like a year in advance, you're looking at $600-$700 a night, which is absurd. But yes, the value is the value. Yeah, it's insane. The value is tremendous, I think. If you actually take the time ahead of time to figure out why am I going, what am I trying, what questions am I trying to answer, who am I attending for, right? If you're going to party, then there are cheaper places to go. I think a week in Vegas would be cheaper.
Yeah, just say summer camp in the summer is better. But let me throw something out to that, because I think that's an interesting point. A lot of times, right, because the three of us, we spend time working with organizations in providing them value in exchange for appropriate and fair compensation. And we support people in the enterprise that are trying to solve problems. And one of the things that I've often noticed is that if we go to, or if I happen to speak at events with CIOs or CTOs or other things, they're much more open to discuss their situations and where they're at and those types of things. And I think you're right. If you go and you have an approach and a problem to solve, or you have an understanding of why I'm here and what will be valuable for me, keep in mind that works no matter who you are. I mean, if you're a vendor, you should have a profile of the ideal folks that you're trying to talk to, or some things there that you're trying to get out of it, because, you know, vendors aren't vultures. Yes, we have those vendors that just, they don't leave us alone and they keep calling and they can't seem to take a hint. But you know what I've learned with them, and what I've learned with other things, is if I explain to them, hi, this is who I am, this is my situation, this is what I'm doing, and it's not a good fit for these reasons, they actually appreciate that. And now, are all going to get that? No. But like, the thing is, there's such a scale of everything happening here. I think that if you map it out properly, it's probably really, really useful, to your point, as long as you're not blowing $1,000 a night in a hotel.
Well, I think it's interesting, Michael, you know, when you take that point, going to something like an RSA versus going to a Black Hat, or, you know, the numerous million other cons that happen throughout the year, like the sheer magnitude of it. If I'm going to go to RSA, I don't just hop a plane and show up at RSA, right? You know, with no preparation. There's actually work, whether you're from the vendor side of, hey, who's our primary target? Who do we know we can spend good time with? And who do we know, you know, hey, let's fast track them kind of moving on. You know, and on the enterprise side, you know, if I'm sending people from my organization to go out to RSA, what problems am I trying to solve? I'm not going there looking for problems. I'm going there with, I know what I'm trying to resolve, right? If I'm the CISO and I'm saying, hey, I got three people going, here's our game plan. These are the things that we're concerned about. If machine learning and AI is not your thing, well, then, you know, yeah, dabble maybe a little bit in it, see what's going on, get some info about it. But, you know, we need help here with endpoint security, and let's go focus on that while we're there.
Yeah, but see, James, here's a catch. That ML and AI weren't just standalone. They're not products. Like, particularly in the endpoint space, it was literally – like booth bingo. I mean, it was, everybody was in the ML. Yeah. And actually it was just after like the NSS Labs report went out. So endpoint was a mess this year. I think that one was just, you know, so
let's stay on that for a second, because, you know, that's the thing that I keep looking at relative to endpoint and the hot areas and stuff. So was this mess of endpoint, was that just like timing and blunders, or is that our focus on the endpoint is overblown, or is it our focus on the endpoint is now going to start to move stuff to a commodity status, and now is when, if you haven't, this is the time to pay attention to it? What do you think on that?
Oy. So I'm a big I'll start with this. I'm a big believer in platform plays. I think three, quote, best of breed companies that do the best things in their niche are less attractive to me as a buyer than one platform that does 80% of all those features but natively works together. By that step, I'm actually – endpoint is finally starting to collapse into a network / endpoint / whatever else kind of story. And so this every year is the year of endpoint, but I think I think it's relevant now, and I think that the massive marketing hype around it is truly deserving. But it really does need a healthy dose of BS detection. It really does.
Seems like that's really part of all of security, though, isn't it? I mean, the more we see stuff coming out, we're starting to see much more that need for that, BS detection going on, you know, just within the industry. So, I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, there's all this information out there. So if I'm sending somebody to RSA to look at certain things, how difficult is it to actually get, I mean, besides just talking to a rep there, like actually a good demo of something that I'm getting, or, you know, that good face-to-face? I mean, you know, what are they talking, you know, 40, 60,000 people that are going to, I mean, you know, it's a mass number of people. You know, how hard is it to get your turn to get information from some of these vendors that you're looking at?
Well, I mean, I've gotten pretty good. I think I've gotten fairly decent at BS detection, just because from the sheer scale of it, right? Which what's marketing hype versus what's real? I've spent a ton of time on it. I get the sense that let me take it in this direction. I get the sense that there's a focus here, and the players kind of all chase each other. One starts down a path, does something bold, whether it's right or not, right? And the rest just sort of follow. Here's a tip. If you were at RSA or maybe didn't go, but you're looking at endpoint right now, there are categories in the endpoint space. I don't need to break them all down for you guys, but let's look at them by use case. Let's talk through that way. What are you doing on your endpoint that you need updated? Is it, you know, are you trying to replace AV? Are you trying to do endpoint encryption? Are you trying to do software delivery and monitoring? Are you trying to do, I don't know, advanced malware protection? Are you doing, you know, what is the thing that you're trying to do? Because whether it's forensics, e-discovery, or you know, full disk encryption or anti-malware, those tend to be slightly different tools. And as I said earlier, the platform play for me is huge. I think that's the winner. And so if I look at all that together, it breaks it back down to just – it's crazy to think that the big vendors, right, the ones that we used to – it's pretty easy to make fun of because they're the big AV vendors that have been around for forever. But it's interesting to look at their technology and what they're doing. And if you strip away the hype from the other players, what the comparisons are. And I got to tell you, I'm still a platform play. I'm still a platform backer after all these years. And I'm hoping the rest of these endpoint players figure that out.
I mean, to be fair, I'm with you. One of the things that we look at, like when we teach people straight talk, the fifth question is communication. People always like, oh, you mean how I'm going to tell people? No, nope. What I mean when we talk about communication is how does this solution communicate with the other solutions that you have? And does that overall streamline and improve your ability to communicate value, or does it hinder it and make it more complicated, more complex, more screens to go to, more panes of glass to view, more somebody else's dashboards better? So to your point, exactly. I'm a huge fan of platforms, especially if this is what I like to see from somebody. They say, we're really good at solving XYZ problem. And we integrate with all the other tools and solutions because we know they're really good at that. So do you have to create your own new dashboard? No. Nope. We'll integrate with whatever you need and however you need. And what I always like to me is this, and this is very much platform play. We will make your other tools better. If you can make that claim and back it up, I think it's interesting. And if I'm in the enterprise, I'm absolutely looking for that. Because if you start, and it's a little scary, but when you start looking at how much time we're spending on things and where we're wasting our time, and then you add a dollar value to that, and then you add that up. I mean, it's not uncommon for teams of like even 10 people to realize that you're wasting $500,000 to $1 million a year on stuff that you can resolve. And that's where I think the platforms come in. Now, Raf, how many times though, or James, I see people that they come in and they say, oh yeah, we're a platform play. And it's almost like you have to say, I'm sorry, do you know what a platform is? Like you said the word platform, but you don't integrate. So when we say platform, how do we differentiate platform from platform-like?
Well, so two things. First, I think the last minute or so, pause right now, go back and listen to what Michael just said. It's tremendously valuable and not enough people say it out loud. Two, to differentiate platform versus platform-like, I think there are – I don't want to get the vendor names here, but we all know who they are. There's a couple of companies that buy companies together, and they call it a platform because they all work for the same company. And there are right. vendors who buy companies, actually natively integrate the tools, which means that there are things like the release cycles are synchronized. Let me just clear my throat there. I had that conversation with two senior product managers this year, and I said, "Hey, look, you guys have claimed platform play for literally almost a decade, and you've bought and sold companies and you spun them out. However, this may be the first year you guys have actually integrated your delivery cycles for software. Like, yeah, well, it's a tough thing to do. I go, I know, but stop telling people you do that if you don't, right? Because they look to it. So when I look at a true platform, is a single dashboard, a single place to control it, manage it, view the events, define policy, and act, right? If you can give me a single point for that, fantastic. If you're giving me five different dashboards, because they're really five separate different tools, it's like, but they all have the same logo, that's not a platform. That's just five products strung together. So that's tremendously powerful. And actually, I think that the broader message there is, Michael, you're kind of dead on. How much time do we waste? It's millions of dollars in productivity, and effort is lost because we look at one dashboard for this, one dashboard for that, one dashboard for that, and before we realize it, we've literally gone through 10 different tools, and that's actually being conservative on the number, and all that time wasted. And by the way, there's a phrase that we use, here at where I work at the day job, is decision advantage. You lose the decision advantage when you've got to switch between dashboards because you got to copy paste. You got to, I'm over here and my SIM fired an alert. Let me go look at my endpoint tool. Oh, let me see if my network sensor saw the same thing. And hey, weird, does that correlate with this activity at the user level? If you've got four different tools you're using, three different tools that you're using for that, then your adversary has a decision advantage because you're always going to be, you're hopelessly going to be behind them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I dig that, actually. I like that concept a lot.
But where's the – I mean, is there market share right now where we have situations where there are people that are platform-esque and an actual platform versus – industries or specific sectors where we don't have anything, like the closest you have is platform like, and there is no alternative to that. Because, obviously you can see where that could create, hey, wait, there's an obvious, gap here that could be filled. But at the same time, how do we look at it and understand? Because from a marketing standpoint, they're going to say platform.
Yes, exactly right.
Even if you're thinking in your head, hey, we'd like to be a platform, and you're nowhere near a platform, right? You use the term platform because that's the key word that's going to get people in. And then, once they get in there, then you kind of drop hints that, we want to be platform, but we haven't got these integrations in. But those are on the roadmap for, 8 years from now. So you should really still go with us, We know how marketing works. It was funny. I was actually just talking to somebody this weekend who's not in security at all, a completely different industry. And it's the same type of thing, right? They know that there's going to be something that requires lots of effort after the fact, right? Once you get everything done through their implementation, there's actually a huge time period of tweaking to get everything right, right? It's not perfect. Think of something like a log management. And you're going in and saying, look, all right, well, we've got events coming in. Now we've got to pare these down, but using that as the example, they don't come in and say, oh, yeah, by the way, once you do this, it's going to take a year before it's ready. You just say, there's going to be some tweaking afterwards, right? But that's how marketing is. We're not always forthcoming. I always love I don't know if anybody's seen the commercial online where they show the contractor sitting in the people's – or it's on TV, right? But they show the contractor sitting in the house and – talking to the people, and he's like, yeah, so basically we're going to destroy the house for 6 months and not do anything about it. And, the lady's saying how she's going to, be on your every move and question everything you do. They talk about honesty during the process. But, any of these situations, we get into them, we say, hey, we're platform. I'm going to say platform. Even though I'm technically not platform, maybe that's part of where I'm going.
Well, that's a fair point. So there's two things there I want to jump on and amplify because they're really important points. The first of which is there's a lot of people who say the word platform because it sounded good. And so what then starts to happen, right? I've been spending a lot of time lately looking at friction. And the problem is you go, yeah, platform. I totally want a platform. Hold on then. What does that mean? What does that mean that you're a platform? And then what does it mean for your organization? And what is it specifically that you're looking for? And are they offering that to you, yes or no? But then let's go to that second point. I've had a lot of conversations lately as I work with more startups and I continue to work with large organizations. Here's a prevailing theme I'm getting from large organizations about working with startups and smaller vendors. I want to work with them, but I don't know what they do. They use these words. It doesn't make any sense. They haven't figured out what I need. They're not connecting to anything valuable for me. And I went, okay, cool. And then I got a new one last week, and it was, and they're not being honest with us about what they can and can't do. They don't get it. We're a huge organization. There's a lot of problems I can fix. There's also a lot of problems I can tolerate if they can help me solve some of the other stuff I've got. And they dance around all these issues. And the guy I was talking to said, you know, if they could just level with me, either I can partner with them and help them solve that problem, or noted, good, and we'll move on. And so it kind of goes back to your point. If you're not a platform yet, but you're heading that way, level with me. Let me know, because, you know, the time it's going to take me to get approval and get this thing launched and get it going and get it stood up, maybe I'm a good reference case for you. Maybe I'm your test case and you're going to spend some extra time on me. As I've been building out Straight Talk, the companies that came in with me, I am learning a ton, but guess what? So are they. And it's a great relationship for both of us. And I think that if people can learn to be more straightforward about it, it's better. But that also requires then knowing and asking those questions. So I guess it's this, right? If you say you want a platform, just gut check. What does that mean? And if you're on the vendor side and you're offering a platform, gut check. What does that mean? And then when you sit with somebody, say we're a platform, if you just say, hey, you know what that is, right? I mean, that's awesome, right? Like, you totally know platforms are great, right? No, you've done everybody a disservice. Ask them about how they use platforms today. Ask them how that fits in their current architecture and environment. Maybe they don't know. Maybe you can show them the benefits to it. And I think that gets us a little bit further. And that's why I was asking about some of these things, because I think it's easy with so many vendors and so many people and so much attention and so much energy and so much money spent on it to get kind of wrapped up in some of it and then walk away and go, the hell I just do? What? And so that's why I wanted to kind of unpack some of this with Raph and say, look, you were there. You know, I've been in years past. People always ask me, you know, why I go or don't go. For me, it's coming out of my own pocket, and I've struggled to connect it to value. But now listening to you guys, I'm kind of going, I wonder if that's right. Like, I talked to a couple friends this week or two weeks ago that they had plans. I mean, like enterprise level plans. Like, there's a team of us, we're going, there's five of us, we're going to divide and conquer. Here's here's our top three initiatives of the year. Here's the questions we're going to ask of each of the vendors. Here's how we're going to get back together and compare notes. They booked an extra day in San Francisco to get together as a team and talk about their notes while they were still fresh in their mind. By the way, if you're doing that #DTSR, tell me how it went, because that's awesome. Like, you are a high performance team if you're kicking ass at that level. That's just awesome.
Well, so here, quick 2 points. One is, James, I think you asked, what were the places where platforms are actually platforms? I think in the next-gen firewall space, that's what it was, you know, a couple of years ago, I think that started consolidating. A couple of those players are pulling in endpoint, they're pulling in network, they're pulling in some of the CASB space into it, and they're genuinely building out those platforms. Are they good at all those periphery things? Oh, hell no. Are they okay at them and getting better? I would say yes. So, and the other one that's naturally that way is the old guard AV space, because frankly, that's where they started with, you know, antivirus. They kept glomming on things, they kept duct taping them, and eventually they started bringing them into the mainstream. And a couple of them figure out how to do that, and the rest are still trying to figure it out. But the reality is that's kind of – I think those are the two spaces that are there. Email is another way – another place where that's become prevalent as well, but not so much, because it's kind of a single it's a single point of solution, really. But again, guys, maybe Michael, you can talk on this, or James, but the word solution – I want to do an Inigo Montoya moment. You keep using that word.
I love that movie.
Well, what do you guys think? I mean, by the way, I got a shirt I posted to Twitter. Threat Connect was giving out these shirts that had the Inigo Montoya picture, which is awesome. But I think the other place that the other micro niche that's spinning out a lot of platform stuff, and purely by necessity because they would die otherwise, is the cyber threat intelligence space. Which is kind of crazy to think, because like such a niche sale, but they're doing they started with delivering data, and they said, hey, we need workflow to support this data. Hey, don't we need this and this and this and now they're building out other pieces to it. But I think those are the main areas that are doing that.
Does that help them, though? I mean, it's being a kind of newer thing, right? I mean, you look at endpoint stuff, a lot of it, I mean, it comes from such a long time ago. Now you look at stuff like Threat Intel that is sort of a newer thing. I mean, not as new, but, you know, I mean, just like looking at startups now, right? They have the capability of building so much more in and doing stuff just from the start than having any type of legacy behind them to have to retrofit to come into that, right? I mean, you talk about... you know, the solutions, you know, and what does that mean? You know, similar to the platform, you know, I mean, people say, oh, we have this solution for you. But, you know, I always, first thing I wonder is, do you know what my problem is?
Oh, besides you.
Endpoint
hashtag
security.
Straight talk. But, did I do hashtag right? Hashtag straight talk. James, thought leader, said, what problem are we trying to solve? Hashtag straight talk. James is awesome. Yeah. No, look, I think.
What are you, the Oliver of hashtags?
I should be. Me? I don't know. I'm learning hashtags. Is that how they work? I'm new at this.
You just have to say hashtag first. That's it.
If you say hashtag first, it's good. So if you say hashtag after, it's not good. But if you say pound sign, you just sound like an old person.
And by the way, like my wife, when she says hashtag, she also like taps her two fingers on each hand, you know, together to form the hashtag when she says it.
Oh, so. Goodness. I'm not that advanced. I'm not even – no, I can't. No. The thing I was going to make, so this is the thing that keeps going through my head relative to this, because we're talking about startups and their ability to pivot and to be able to add stuff to it. So I kind of got kind of two thoughts, right? Like we keep dubbing all this stuff as next generation. How many freaking generations are we at now? Like we're running out of next generations. Star Trek did it and they had to come up with something. Oh, so we're going to deep space next. Like we're going to have like Deep Space Nine as our next thing for security. But on a more serious note, what I think is kind of interesting is that things that we talked about, well, I've been doing this for a little over 20 years. So things we talked about 20 years ago that really never really could get off the ground, behavior analysis and looking at statistical analysis of things to tell us where there's errors and being able to incorporate more data points of stuff. We couldn't do it. We didn't have the disk capacity. We didn't have the speed. We didn't have the processors. We couldn't use the memory. It didn't work. And what I've been kind of taken with in a really positive and exciting way is that I see people in the last maybe 18 months or so describing things that I thought we tried 20 years ago. And so without sounding like too much of a curmudgeon, I usually say to them, what changed? I mean, if you can actually do it, cool. Here's the problems we ran into 20 years ago. What changed? And they're like, oh, dude, the whole world's changed. Boom. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And so what's kind of interesting to me is that on one hand, we're looking at next gen stuff. And on the other hand, I'm seeing some solutions pop up that are like, look, I don't need to be next gen. We finally figured out how to do some of these so-called fundamentals better. By the way, the reason I say so-called is I don't know if you guys have seen this, and I'm not sure how much this came up at RSA, but I see a lot of things that something happens and people lament, oh, if they just on the fundamentals. I promise you this. If we wanted to, and maybe sometime if we next time maybe we are, the three of us are all together in person, we should figure out, just sketch it out. I'm willing to bet we could do 10 shows on the top 10 fundamentals and not have to hit the same fundamental twice, which
yeah,
means – we don't have any freaking clue what the real fundamentals are. I know someone's throwing something right now. My name is Jardine, Jardine Software. Did I do that part right? Yeah. Hashtag James said it, not Michael. But, you know, look, I like the idea of fundamentals. I like the idea of basics. I keep trying to figure them out myself. It's something I've been trying to pursue for a number of years. You know, maybe the CIS critical controls is it. I don't know. But we can't keep saying, well, that was easy. Well, that was fundamental. Well, that was easy. I don't know what that means. Like, if we can't point to it and define it clearly, cleanly. And by the way, if your list of fundamentals has got 30 things on it, they're not fundamentals.
Yeah. Well, look, in hindsight, right? I mean, hindsight's always 20/20. You know, I want to go back real quick, though, and touch on you had mentioned relationship earlier, Michael, and Raf, you know, you start talking about solutions. And, you know, when you bring the two together, if I'm looking for solutions, one of the things I'm looking for is what type of relationship am I having with a vendor? Because, you know, how many vendors do you have where you get a product, you know, but there's really no relationship there. You give me a product, I pay you, and that's pretty much it. You know, and if something goes bad, maybe you pay me some more and I'll fix it for you. But when do we see, you know, where the vendor is actually open to this? Look, we're trying to build real solutions, and to do that, we have open communication. I'm not going to, once you sign on the dotted line and we finally get that invoice check come through, you're dead to me. It's, look, I want to know, what are you guys doing? What are you running into that's causing problems? So that way I can update my platform to make sure that I am actually solving your solution. You know, and that, this is one of the things, you know, I mean, on my side, when I'm doing like AppSec stuff, you know, working with companies, we, you know, we do lots of different things, testing being one of them. I don't like coming in and do an app test where it's just, all right, I'll come in for a week, I'll do a test, I'll give you a report, and I'm done. Right? I want to have a relationship with my clients so that way we know, hey, what's working? Okay, we found this stuff. What do we need to do to help with this? You know, are you guys implementing things to fix this in the future so you don't keep doing it? What are we going from this versus just, here's a report, see you later, and, you know, next year call me again. Hey, look, there's plenty of companies that'll do that for you. I'll give you their names if you want. But, you know, if you actually really want to start solving some of these problems, it requires much more than these one-offs or just buying a tool and implementing it and saying, all right, well, we got it running. We must be good, because they're not integrating with all the different things. And, you know, you look at static analysis tools that, and you're like, okay, well, do you integrate with Visual Studio? And they're like, well, that's coming down the road. You know, these are things that we have to understand, and the vendors have to understand that, right? To know, hey, what do you really need? Why is this guy not really impressed with buying my analyzer? Oh, because all they use is Visual Studio, and that doesn't make sense. You know, that's the thing I wonder, you know, how much are we going to see more relationship building going on between vendors and clients from that respect?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that's the thing that I would start calling out and highlighting and searching for more of. I mean, Raf, I know you spend a lot of time building relationships with people. James, you spend a lot of time building relationships with people. And I think that's what it's going to take. Look, this is an interesting statement. I think right now, the success that we face in security is largely predicated on how effective we can work with other people and how much we can influence their actions in a way that benefits everybody from a security perspective. But that said, I also think long-term, we've got a really compelling play for technology solutions that can solve some of these problems for us or that can take over some of that stuff from us. And the two have to work hand in hand. I think vendors that can show that level of authenticity, that want to work with people, that build that relationship and want to really understand the challenges in the marketplace and advance powerful solutions, I think they win long term. But that's really true if we can learn to also build those relationships. And so that's what I hope that we get out of this.
And that is a fantastic place to end this week's show. Boy, you know, I'm glad to be home. RSA, as always, is a huge event, and if you went, I hope you got some good value out of it, and both from, you know, a vendor and an attendee perspective. And, you know, this is one of those events that more people go to every year. And I got to tell you, if you're just out there talking about how it's useless and just nothing good comes of it, then I think you're missing some of the opportunity that happens. You know, it's not for everybody, obviously, right? Some people prefer the much more technical and in-depth, you know, summer camp in a desert. But for the most part, I think this is a very valuable thing to attend. And if you treat it seriously, and if you take the time to, like Michael said, to address, you know, why you're going, what you're going to learn, I think it turns positive pretty quick.
I think that's interesting, Raf. You know, I mean, it really points out that, you know, attending this is a task. You know, it's not just flying into a conference. It's, you know, there's lots of work that goes into it, you know, which I guess, you know, if it's going to be expensive, you know, make it worth your time. Put the time in, you know, put the effort in. That way you get something out of it, not just a free trip away from the office.
I'm gonna end this show by quoting a, and I can't remember who's in the commercial, but I think it's a beef jerky commercial. You get out what you put in. Mic drop, done.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's more Rimshot. Rimshot hashtag? No, I don't know how this works. All right.
Well, thanks, guys. This has been fun. We need to do wrap-up shows like this for other stuff. Well, all right. It's another week. Thanks for listening to the Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. If we caught up at RSA, awesome. If we didn't, hashtag DTSR, Down to Security Rabbit Hole. If you went, you want to share a story, a good one, bad one, indifferent one, or just share an experience you had, what you learned, what your tips and tricks are for getting the most out of conferences like RSA Conference, and hopefully hopefully there's value there for you. So this is Raf for James and Michael. We're going to sign off and call this a day. Thanks for listening, you guys. We'll have a wonderful day, morning, afternoon, night, whatever time it is there. We'll see you another time, another place, on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Ciao.
You've been listening to Down the Rabbit Hole Enterprise Security News. Give us feedback on our website, podcast.whiterabbit.net. That's whitrabbit.net. Or on Twitter at White Rabbit, whitrabbit. Till next time, on behalf of our co-hosts James Jardine, Michael Santarcangelo, and the White Rabbit, Rafael Los, thanks for listening.